I move that the SJR 29 be brought before the body for perfection.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Howell.
Yes, Mr. President, I have a Senate substitute, and I ask that the Senate substitute be sent back, and I have a new sub to send forward.
Madam Secretary, send back the Senate substitute and send the new substitute forward. Has it been distributed?
I believe it has been distributed, and I ask for a waiver of the reading, and I move for the adoption of the substitute.
Seeing no objection, the reading will be waived. Would you like to explain your substitute?
You bet. What the substitute did is what we did is we looked at a few questions that had been brought to me, and hopefully we took care of and addressed those in the Senate substitute. And those three changes were it basically clarified the insurance products. There was a question whether sometimes premiums or fees from insurance companies, it was debatable whether those were exempt, and what we did is we clarified that to make sure that it met the clarification, the concerns that some people had on that. And also it requires the General Assembly to put in a method of recalculating local levies if those calculations prove to be incorrect. Currently, if we go to this type of system, local sales taxes, to avoid a windfall and make sure that it remains revenue neutral, local municipalities are required to roll back to make it revenue neutral. And what it does is basically gives them an ability, if they make a mistake, to recalculate that rollback so that it does not have any harm and is truly stays revenue neutral to local municipalities. And also it requires the General Assembly a method for calculating the prebate or the rebate. We're not really sure whether it'll be a prebate. They will receive that. For instance, at the first of the year, it would be a prebate or a rebate that will be done, you know, sometime throughout the year after someone has already made the purchase and has paid the tax. But what it does is it replaces may with shall and makes sure that rebate will be in the encompassing legislation that will follow if this act is approved by voters. So basically those are the three changes that we've done on this, and I'd be glad to answer any questions people may have on it. Mr. Chairman, can I inquire the senator from the 17th?
First of all, let me repeat the motion that Senator from Howell has moved the adoption of the Senate substitute for SJR 29, has inquired of the senator from the 17th, and does she yield? She does. Proceed.
Hi, Senator.
Good afternoon. You know, I'm rough on this court.
Yeah, I
like to walk around, you know, like a...
You're not allowed to. Up today, too. What are we doing here?
We made three changes, and I know that you had inquired and have a similar bill in committee and had talked about some of these issues. But, you know, as we've gone throughout this year, you know, I'm sitting here right now trying to figure out what we're doing for job creation. And right now I'm coming up with a blank on what we really want to do. Now, we are trying to look at tax credits and looking at those areas, but you know, I gotta tell you, those haven't been working very well.
When you look at
this, and I always used to think that I was 10 years behind everybody, you know, but I'm beginning to discover that I may, instead of 10 years behind, I may be 5 years ahead of everybody, because what I'm looking here is a two-step concept to redo the way we do economic development in the state of Missouri.
Right.
Number one is, and this is one of the issues that you had, is when you have states that are surrounding us, eight states that are touching us that we compete with, we basically, through our economic development, we're doing a race to the bottom. In other words, all the states are going broke because we are too busy building Christmas trees trying to get businesses to relocate to us, and we compete with all these states that are surrounding us.
Well, we keep trying to outbid each other, and at some point, every state that's trying to outbid the other one is going to break themselves.
It's a race to the bottom.
It is.
It's good. It's who is going to break first.
It's a race to broke.
And begin the process. But, and our answer to that is to come up with a new economic development program with new bells and take the 61 tax credits and put them into six categories that they can be appropriated out of. Well, imagine a concept. Imagine this concept. Now, this is when I finally realized that I'm not 10 years behind, but I could be 5 years ahead. Imagine this concept in the state of Missouri. First of all, if you look at companies that are relocating, they're relocating states that do not have a corporate or personal income tax.
Right.
So they look to that first. Then they go out and they look at what deals they can get once they meet that mm-hmm. requirement. What? Imagine. Let's dream for a minute here.
Yeah.
Right now, I consider myself an entrepreneur, starting two businesses and running a business, and what the biggest thing entrepreneurs want mm-hmm. is what? It's to be left alone.
Leave them alone.
Leave
Don't
me alone.
Don't tax them to death. Regulate them to death.
When you go home and stand in front of a crowd of businessmen, what scares them the most is, I'm from the government and I'm here to
help
you.
You.
Scares them to death.
Yep.
Can you imagine a system mm-hmm. that we go out and tell businesses, while all the other states around us are beating themselves to death,
right.
we go out and tell an entrepreneur that is looking to do what they do best, and that is grow a business and create jobs. We go to them and say, you know, if you come to Missouri, what we're not going to do is we're not going to charge you any corporate income tax.
Right.
We're going to waive your no personal income tax. Mm-hmm. We're going to give you low regulation. We're going to give you low taxes. Mm-hmm. We're basically going to leave you alone to let you do what you do best, and that's grow your business, create jobs, and have a vibrant economy.
Well,
instead of going
else.
Out and saying, if you come to us, we're going to give you these tax credits, we're going to give you these tax credits, we're going to continue to regulate you because we have to regulate you and tax you in order right. to afford to buy the tax credits to give out to all the other trinkets around. But imagine if we got out, as politicians, got out of economic development, because we don't know anything about economic development. We can
really.
See that because we're failing at it miserably. But just go to a businessman and say, come to Missouri, we'll leave you alone, and we won't
right.
tax you out of business. We won't mm-hmm. regulate you out of business. Come in and build your company here in the state of Missouri or expand your company.
Right.
And what this does is I have an amendment that I'm going to offer on the economic development bill that eliminates the Department of Economic in 3 years and sets and brings in this concept of the Jobs and Missouri Jobs and Prosperity Act of going to a sales tax rather than tax people on how much they make. That's
right.
one avenue, and then come in and eliminate the Department of Economic Development and let the people that create jobs actually be in charge of economic development.
Right.
It's a novel concept that instead of racing our way to the top with 61 tax credits and 130 tax exemptions, why don't we take a different approach and have the approach that government doesn't know what they're doing when it comes to economic development. We suck at it.
Right.
We, you know, look at our economy now. Look at the jobs that are surrounding us.
Right.
And give entrepreneurs what they want the most, and that is to be left alone and grow their business and grow their job with a minimum of regulations and allow you to keep what you earn in your pocket.
Well, Senator,
you'll
totally
pay the
agree.
Tax because you're going
right.
to buy more stuff.
Right.
So
well, and people get an automatic increase in their household income because instead of having withholding in order to pay the Missouri income tax, they don't have that withholding anymore. So they automatically, the minute that this passes, people automatically have more money in their household income to spend. I think that's a plus for Missourians.
Well, I tell people, you know, that I'll pay more in sales tax. But when you tell them that, yes, but you pay no withholding, uh-huh. Missouri withholding tax, so your paycheck is bigger. You know, their eyes light up because they never thought of it that way.
Right.
You know, and but the concept of what we do in America is we say that we're free enterprise, we're a free market society, and then turn around and do the opposite.
Right.
Because we tax people, the more you go out and the more you earn, the higher rates you get taxed.
Yeah, which is really dumb. It's like taking your best vehicle and overloading it to the point that you wreck it. Because right now, the harder you work and the more industrious you are, the bigger tax burden we pile on you, which doesn't make sense to me. So the harder you work, the more we're going to tax you. That doesn't make any sense at all.
You know, this is off the subject, but I got an email from a gentleman last night that I asked a couple people to look at it because I didn't know how to respond.
Right.
But it was coming with college scholarship. His son was a 3.8 GPA. What their mistake was is he worked two jobs, his wife worked a job, trying to put their kid through college, enough money to go to college.
That means they don't qualify for anything.
And he said, yeah, that is absolutely true.
Right.
The son was working a job trying to come up and buy be able to come up with a tuition because
right.
there's no help for them.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy down the road that basically did nothing,
yep.
and the wife that did nothing,
they qualify.
They get a free ride all through college. Their child, because they made the attempt to do nothing,
right.
they're rewarded because they're eligible for scholarship.
For doing nothing.
So this guy's frustrated because his question was, how do I explain this to my son that because we worked and work hard and you work, that you don't qualify for any of the scholarships?
Exactly.
You know, what do I tell this kid? And my question is, what do I say to him? You know, well, you're absolutely right. You know, this is not
right.
You
agree with him. That's
well,
exactly right.
What the tax code does is basically the same thing. It penalizes you for doing what you're supposed to be doing.
That's
going
exactly
out
right.
and working. The sales tax, what it does is everyone pays the same amount.
Mm-hmm.
And they pay by the amount of stuff they consume. So you buy more, you pay more.
Right.
So I don't understand why, unless you like the redistribution of wealth method, I don't understand why this is not a way of getting back to what America was founded on, is you work hard, you get to keep what you earn, and you pay tax when you go out and buy stuff.
Well, and that's exactly what we should be doing. But the other thing that's interesting to me is this last summer, before we were in legislative session, I had meetings in downtown Kansas City with... Basically, the whole question is, what's wrong that we don't have more economic activity? Why are we losing to other states? Why do we lose things to Kansas? And one of the things that we talked about was, yes, we have to have tax credit reform because we can't keep down here in Jefferson City picking winners and losers. We've got that constantly. We've got it with the access charges bill. We've got it to some extent with the tobacco bill. There's all kinds of bills that we have pending down here as the body here and in the House of Representatives, we are picking winners and losers, and government isn't supposed to do that in a capitalist society. The marketplace is where the winners and losers are supposed to be chosen, and that's how, even with all the regulations that we have, that's how we came to have the highest standard of living that I think the world has ever known, is because for the longest time we had a market-based economy. Well, if we can do something different, finally, really, truly different, because right now, for years, and you and I are the same thing, we're both recovering tax creditaholics. In the House of Representatives, when we served there, it seemed like a reasonable idea and a reasonable way for people who were producing to put more money back in their hands. Well, the problem of it is now it's become a boondoggle where our current state auditor is telling us that even for low-income housing tax credits, only 35 or 36 cents of every dollar is actually going into providing low-income housing. The rest is going to developers, to syndicators, to a whole lot of folks who are really doing nothing to put those low-income people into quality housing. We'd be better off to take our 35 or 36 cents and just build a house for them And then we wind up with $400,000 per unit. Well, you can build a lovely house for $400,000. Instead, they wind up with some little apartment or condo.
When government gets into economic activity and development, you get things like the statistics that show that through the stimulus spending, they created a job that cost $600,000 a year of tax dollars to create one job. And usually, you know, you look at what's happening now is the job numbers in the national market. Mm-hmm. They're not counting the census workers that were hired just to do the census.
Exactly.
They're not hired. They're not talking about the people. A lot of people in my district that are working 2 days a week because the businesses are shutting down, and they want to keep the workforce occupied and in town, so they cut back to 1 to 2 days a week. They're not talking about the people that have taken a job at McDonald's or somewhere just to pay the bills. You know, the numbers are skewed because government doesn't do job creation well except in the government sector. And the government sector creates bureaucrats and red tape that stops economic activity at the small business level.
Because you have
to have higher taxes and more regulation to do that, which is the exact opposite of what we ought to be doing. So,
you know, the next thing that they're going to be counting are the 16,000 or how many ever thousands of new IRS agents that they're going to be hiring.
16,000.
And they'll say, gee, well, that's a really good idea. IRS agents to look over our shoulder to determine what kind of health care plan that we have.
When the fact is you don't need an IRS agent because when you buy something at the store, it's already figured in.
Perfect.
You already pay sales tax. So you spend the money there, the business sends it in, and the IRS goes away.
You should also be aware that today we had a lot of the convenience store folks here that have the gas station convenience stores. And I went over to visit with some people. They don't actually live in my district, but they were from Kansas City. And from the south of the river, Kansas City, and kind of the urban core area, they have convenience stores and gas stations in Missouri, and they also have them in Kansas. And I said, well, I'm interested in the fair tax. I'm interested in Missouri Jobs and Prosperity and switching over to a consumption tax and moving away from the income tax. I said, what's your opinion? Because I thought if anybody was going to express some opposition, that they would be opposed to it. And they were all for it. I said, I'm absolutely for it. They said, we have businesses in Kansas. We have businesses in Missouri. It doesn't bother us at all to switch to that. In fact, we're for it. And I started asking them because the question has become over in my area, well, will we end up driving sales across the border into Kansas? These folks have businesses on both sides of the state line. They said, that doesn't worry us at all. Because they said, you can look at it, and as soon as people start getting over a few block difference, they will not travel that far. And right now, we started talking about Nebraska Furniture Mart, and they said, sure, people are already making a decision to shop over there, but the dirty little secret about that is most all of that is tax increment financing, so people really aren't paying a sales tax over there. They're paying a fee right back to the developer that built that, and nobody's talking about that. So, you know, it's one of these things where, that to me, if we've got to do something very, very different than what we have been doing, because as you have said before, and you're absolutely correct, the definition of insanity is to keep doing what you've always done and expect a different result. We continue to pile on tax credits. We continue to pile on
61 of them.
Tax credits. And I flat had an employer in my district that's a pretty significant employer who was expanding jobs look at me and say, I will never create a job based on getting a tax credit. Now, I may create the job and then come down here and apply for the tax credit because I'd be a fool if I didn't. But I will not create a new job based on the tax credit, because what the government gives me, the government can take away from me. So I'm not going to do that. And that's what we've been trying to second guess, what a lot of people who are a whole lot better at economic development, otherwise known as the job producers and the job and the business owners, we in government have been trying to second guess them and basically bribe them with our people's tax dollars to come over here and create jobs by what we've been calling tax credits. It doesn't work, or Missouri wouldn't have an unemployment rate reaching 10%. But if we would be among the first states in the nation, if not the first state in the nation, to completely switch and get away from our income tax and switch over to this consumption tax, everybody who's been evading the tax to this point would have to pay.
Illegal aliens pay sales
Everybody
tax.
Pays. That's right. You buy, you pay. And then our
drug
tax
dealers,
rate.
Drug dealers who do not declare taxes pay tax for everything that they buy.
Well, even people who are working for cash. We were just talking about this in the child support debate. People who work for cash, as soon as they go buy something, boom, they pay the tax.
You know, it is amazing. If you want to learn something amazing about work ethic when it comes to the Ozarks, go stand in the line selling walnuts, because everybody that cannot work at a regular job is out picking up walnuts for cash.
Amazing.
It is amazing.
Amazing.
And they get paid cash, so there's no government, you know, they don't pay in income tax, but you know what? When they go down and buy a six-pack after they spend all day picking up walnuts, they just contributed to the tax.
That's right. They can pay the taxes.
And
higher taxes.
Instead of the person that worked 10 hours a day at a job, 8 hours a day, and then went out and picked up walnuts and gets charged an income tax
right.
before going out and working hard, and then turns around and he pays the same tax as someone that spent all day picking up walnuts and goes home and gets their government check
yep.
once a month.
And
so it's amazing. The concept of this is I was told that Kansas has now filed a similar piece of legislation because they're afraid Missouri will go to this and put Kansas at a competitive
disadvantage.
Because again, other states are beginning to understand we're racing to the bottom because we're giving away stuff to as the senator from Cape says. To the businessmen and the lobbyists in three-piece suits.
Because
are paid here by big developers. You know, the senator from the 18th talked about the $80 million tax credit we gave to the developer in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, imagine a small entrepreneur telling him, we're not going to do any of that stuff. You're
right.
on the same level playing field, whether you have 3 employees or 5 employees, as the guy that's got 1,000 employees. You're going to have the same competitive advantage as him through our tax code. Is you are going to go out and compete with him level to level. Instead of having to hire lobbyists to come up here and dangle shiny objects in front of legislators to get them to vote you a special favor.
And you're exactly right, because the fact of the matter is, right now in Missouri, it's a reality of life that there are businesses that are in the business of helping other businesses locate new businesses in the United States. They're called siding companies. Right now, Missouri doesn't even make the list as a possible place that they're going to recommend for a new business to be located. So you get somebody who's got some jobs out there, they're on the move, they're expanding, they go work with a siding company to determine where they're going to place their business. Missouri doesn't even make the first cut because they start looking around at our regulatory environment, not the best in the world, probably, you know, medium to maybe even bad. We can't possibly compete with states that can offer big ticket dollars like New York, New Jersey, Florida, places like that where their dollars are inflated. I mean, the salaries are inflated out there, the dollars are inflated, so it's hard for us to compete with them on that. Then all of a sudden you look at Missouri, and there is one thing that we're not short of in Missouri, and that is taxes. We have real property taxes. We have personal property taxes. We have commercial taxes. We have corporate taxes. We have franchise taxes. We have income taxes. Then you got to pay the federal income tax. Then you have to pay earnings taxes. So by the time you start calculating everything up, let's just do a quick tally. If you're among the lowest cost and you own your own business, and you know this because you own your business and I own my business, and let's say your federal income tax rate was 25%, which I believe is one of the lower percentages for the federal income tax. Then you got to pay self-employment tax on top of that. That's 15%. Okay, so there's 25, 35, 40%. Then you have to pay a minimum of 7% to the state of Missouri, 47%. If you live in the city of Kansas City, there's another 1%. That's 48%. So even if you don't have high income, and you own your own business, you are taxed at a nearly 50% tax rate just on your income. Then you start adding on, well, gee, I've got a couple of used cars, and I got a trailer out there. that I haul a few things with, so you got to pay personal property tax on top of that. Then you got to pay your real estate taxes, which at a minimum in my area is on an average home is going to be around another, I'd say probably at least $300, $400 per month. So you're looking at $3,600. Look at how we just nickel and dime people to death, and yet we have the audacity to say, oh, we're a low tax state. No, we're an everything taxed state. And so if we would switch and for once turn around and say, okay, we're done with this. We're done with the income tax and do something radically different where the state will still have an income stream. And it's my understanding, furthermore, that the studies show that a sales tax-driven income for a state is much more steady and much more dependable than an income tax-driven state. So it seems to make all kinds of sense for us to switch over to that. I'm glad to see in your, I think you were talking about in your substitute that you changed and clarified on the insurance premiums to make sure that those fees are taken care of, that that's out. You've also cleaned up some language with regard to the local political subdivisions.
Yeah, I want to explain, this is a new concept. This is, no other state has taken this on. And to me, that is one of the biggest selling points, is because you look at the states that continue to do what we are doing, they're going broke, and they're not creating jobs. Because people are going to shop around until they get the best deal, and that's usually not the best deal for the taxpayer.
Right.
But just imagine, just in a dream world, you have to understand entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs, people that run businesses, want to do what they do best,
right,
with a minimal amount of government interference.
Correct.
But government thinks they know all this stuff, and they want to get involved because they want a piece of the action. But we sit here in our wisdom, try to figure out how to do economic development when 90% of this body has no idea how to do economic development.
And look,
so
the person,
why don't we just let experts do it? And that's the guy that went out, the guy or gal that started a business and wants to grow that business. So begin fostering those people and empower them to go out. And this Jobs and Prosperity Act is I think a step in that direction of putting Missouri into the forefront of economic development, because we're allowing individuals and people that have small businesses to be the person in charge of their own economic development.
Well,
the expert that does it on a day-by-day basis.
Exactly.
That cares about the bottom line, that actually cares about the product that he's putting out, putting them empowered rather than politicians that for 4.5 months out of the year, we come up here and pretend that we're economic development experts.
And if we were, we probably wouldn't be here. We would probably be inside our own corporation at home. I'm proud to say I own two businesses right now. And, if I was at home to work them more, they'd probably be doing better.
Well, I'd be more profitable if I was at
home.
They'd
be more
right
profitable.
Now.
But, Senator, they're.
But this,
we have
you have to remember,
up.
This is where the fight is.
Well, it is.
Because government's here to help us.
Yeah, government, yeah. Right. That's the thing that concerns me, and I've said this before, that almost always missing in our testimony in front of our committees, is who's representing the average taxpayer out there? Where's their lobbyist? When do they get to speak up? And the only way that they get a seat at the table, honestly, because they're back at home working, paying the bills, taking care of their families, they can't come down here to Jefferson City. So they're in our minds and in our memory. And if we don't stand up for them, nobody's going to. And I'm looking at this as one of the best ways to put Missouri on the map, create jobs, and clear things up, because I've also had to clear up misconceptions, and we've also had to change and refine this to answer concerns. We heard the concerns of people who were concerned about educational double taxation. We took care of that. That's already taken care of. We took care of, what about it being a regressive tax? Aren't people who are on the lower income spectrum going to be disproportionately affected by this? We've taken care of that with regard to the prebate or the rebate. There's so many things in here that, because of the debate that we've had on this, we've been able to work out a lot of those concerns. And I'm really glad to see that we've
Senator
done that.
Senator Clay, I want to get some additional information on this. If I can, I want to thank you for your inquiry.
Thank you.
Mr. President, Can I inquire the senator from Cape?
Senator from Cape, would you yield to the senator from Howell for an inquiry?
I yield.
Senator from Cape, I want to thank you. You are doing, I thought a very, very smart thing, and that's what you're doing is you're gathering information. And for the last year, you have been contacting the Department of Economic Development to ask them how many jobs were created with the giant economic development bill that we passed last year that we had to have to stimulate the economy and continue down the road of the current economic development policy we have. Can you tell me, have you sent that letter this week?
I just sent it today because it's Wednesday. So every Wednesday of every week, our office, we send out a letter to DED that basically asks this question. How many jobs were created in the state of Missouri because of the passage of House Bill 191? You know, when we were debating that and everyone said, hey, we need to pass this to add jobs to the state. So every week, and the answer has remained, the latest data and answer that I've gotten to my letter is zero.
So
not one job was created.
We passed that last year.
Correct.
You've gotten a weekly jobs report and it shows zero.
Correct. Well, they don't always answer every week. It's whenever they choose to answer. But I send them a letter every week.
Okay. So our economic development that we did last year has created zero?
Well, what I have asked is a pointed question, which is because of House Bill 191, how many jobs were created? Meaning, had we not passed House Bill 191, how many jobs would that have cost the state of Missouri? And they have answered zero. Now, I can tell you a few isolated individuals that are very happy that we passed House Bill 191 last year. But
have you been listening?
I don't know that we created any jobs.
Have you been listening any to our conversation that, the concept that we in state government know more about economic development than a small business owner that on a day-by-day basis grows a job, grows a business and creates jobs. The point I've been trying to make is we don't do a very good job at economic development. So why don't we allow experts that do it on a day-by-day basis, that's the small business owner, make his own decisions, keep his own money, and go in and create jobs, and basically say the concept that I'm from the government and I'm here to help you scares
right.
them to death.
Right.
And that if you go out on a national level and sit down at a board of a person that wants to bring jobs to the state of Missouri, and let's say the state of Illinois goes into them and says, if you come to Illinois, we're going to give you this, we're going to give you this, you're going to do this, but you have to do these certain things in order for us to give you all this stuff. But in the end, if you go by through all these rules, we're going to give you this. Or I go in and say, I know that you don't trust government. That government, you usually end up paying a lot more for stuff that you really don't need to be paying for.
Right.
If you come to the state of Missouri, we're not going to charge you any corporate tax. We're not going to charge you any franchise tax. We're not going to charge you any income tax. We're going to allow you, we're going to keep regulation low. We're going to basically leave you alone and let you go out and grow a business and create jobs and do our best to keep government off your back and you go do what you do best if you come to Missouri. If you're an entrepreneur, which one are you going to go to?
Yeah, you're going to go to the latter, no doubt.
You're going to go
exactly.
Where you have the freedom to do what you want to do.
Well,
within reason. You can't go out and pollute stuff and stuff like that.
And more particular to that point, Senator, where I agree, and I know that we're preaching to the choir here, but all of these mythical white elephants we keep chasing with these tax credits, they're not even the ones that really statistically create jobs. And they'll admit it. I mean, the vast majority of jobs are created by the individuals that don't even benefit and, worse yet, are specifically excluded from this. It's like the individual that goes out to hunt for food, and the only food that he wants to eat is the mythical white elephant. So he continues to hunt for the mythical white elephant.
That white elephant.
And you know what happens to him at the end of the day? He starves to death and dies. And what we've been doing is we've been hunting this mythical white elephant to land this great job. And I would respectfully submit to you that if you really want to unleash economic development in the state of Missouri, all you have to do is two things. Two bills that I've introduced. Make Missouri a right-to-work state, and make sure that we don't have to pay a minimum wage that's higher than the national minimum wage. We do those two things, and then all of a sudden, we're competitive with all of the manufacturing jobs we lost. And what
two things to that. I want to add the Jobs and Prosperity Act, where you don't penalize
people for the more you earn.
Yeah. You pay a consumption tax, and you put economic development in charge of the people that do it best, and that's the people that create jobs.
And I would concur with that.
You know, if you do that, that eliminates tax credits. It eliminates tax exemptions because you don't need them anymore.
Right.
Because you make the decision by what you purchase
on what tax you pay. Yeah, and as it relates to what we're talking about with tax credits, you know, my reforms and what I've put forward are very simple and very straightforward. I want this General Assembly to actually pay for everything they authorize, everything that they allocate. Do you know, Senator, that we have a $2.3 billion accrued liability for tax credit redemptions currently out there in the state? And you might say, well, how does that happen? That's because this General Assembly and all previous General Assemblies have spent money that isn't theirs. They have issued, created, allocated programs that they haven't paid for. So we have a huge unaccrued liability in the form of tax credit redemptions to the tune of $2.3 billion that are going to hit us like left and right hooks in these most difficult of financial times that we are facing as a state. And all my reforms basically say are, on a going forward basis, if you want to do X with tax credits, then pay for it. Pay for it to an actuarially sound basis. Meaning if you want to do a 10-year tax credit, then put a significant amount of money away so that you can fund that 10-year liability in the year in which you improve it. Quit approving stuff and making other generations pay for it. The federal government has gone insane with that. Meaning they want to provide all of these entitlements and all of these benefits that they never pay for. You know, it's Senator Claire McCaskill that has picked up the mantra of PAYGO. Now, beef with Senator McCaskill is it's PAYGO on only the stuff I want to PAYGO on, and if I want to exclude something from PAYGO, then that's okay. You know, it's either you pay as you go or you don't pay as you go. And what I'm trying to do is to say, as it relates with tax credits, make them subject to an appropriations process, not subject to an allocations process, not subject to an approval process, but subject to an appropriations process, to an actually sound number, just like we fund retirement benefits, so that we actually pay for this stuff. And then I think an amazing thing will occur when that happens. And the amazing thing that will occur is that all of a sudden, people are going to start looking at the return on investment they get here. You know, and I made an interesting debate, an example with the senator from the 26th last year, where he wanted to raise the cap on the bill program. And I asked during the debate, well, what is the bill program? We don't know. But we're going to raise the cap on it because it, quote unquote, adds jobs. Okay, fair enough. Well, what would be the problem with just allocating $40 million to the build program in the appropriations process? Well, why would we ever appropriate any money that we didn't know what it was going for? That's my main point. I offered the amendment in the appropriations process in DED's budget and said, hey, we're going to raise the cap on the build program by $20 million, so I'm just going to offer an amendment in the appropriations process to give DED $20 million more dollars.
So
and everyone was like, why in the world are you going to give DED $20 million more dollars?
You're making my whole point is we don't do that very well. So why
it's not
we,
that we don't do it very
we
well. We don't do it at all.
Why are we even involved in it? If you want to create jobs,
well,
empower the small businessman that creates jobs in the first place.
I've asked a very...
him to grow his business.
I've asked a very... what I think is a legitimate question, and I've asked the General Assembly to engage in this one-year experiment with me. And that is to say, would we really do what we do with tax credits if all of the people out there that benefited from the tax credits couldn't make campaign contributions? I don't know. Wouldn't it be an interesting experience in this state if we would actually find out if we were more in tune with the results that are generated by the tax credits, i.e. adding jobs, because that's what everyone says a tax credit does, is add jobs, or are we really more in tune with the fact that we like the campaign contributions that those individuals receive as a result of their tax credits? If you give me $18 million in a particular tax credit, I'll make $1 million in campaign contributions. I'll do that all
day
long.
That's pretty good. I believe if I can cipher that, that's an 18-to-1 return rate.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what's interesting. That's what I would ask this General Assembly to also pursue and throw out as an option. Would we really do the tax credit policy that we do if the people that benefit from those tax credits couldn't make campaign contributions?
Well,
I think the answer is clear, because we have seen example after example how these people that benefit from these tax credits create these shell organizations like People for World Peace Committee is actually owned by a rich developer that gets low-income housing tax credit. He's got like 9 of those things that have nothing to do with the industry that he actually engages in. But he creates these weird entities and does everything that he can to hide. And it wasn't until, I think, the Post-Dispatch actually exposed all of the committees that this rich developer that benefits from low-income housing tax credits has to hand out campaign contributions.
Well, I want to thank you for that, because I knew you kept track of...
It's zero.
Work of this body last year on the...
Yeah, 191 has created 0 jobs.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. President.
Senator from Howell.
I think we've outlined the concept here. We have a great chance in this state to do what no other state has done, and begin being the magnet for job creation in the state by empowering individuals to make the choices and grow their business with a minimal amount of government interference. We have a great chance to do this with first allowing to be put before the voters of the state of Missouri an option to go a different direction and get different results of having this legislative body drive and create jobs, and rather have individuals and small businesses across the state create jobs. And I'd like to at this time lay this bill on the informal calendar, and I want everyone to study the issue and next week hopefully have some questions and begin the process of moving in this direction. Thank you, Mr.
Resolution
President.
Resolution shall be placed back on the informal calendar with the Senate substitute number 2 pending.